Hi, I'm Shirley Fessel, author of Redemption from Biblical Battering, Your Faith-Based Path to Freedom. I'm so thrilled today that we're going to be exploring how to help the helpers, how to help women and men reach out to isolated victims in quarantine. Even during these difficult times, there are several things we can still do. The efforts to help cannot stop because of this situation. I'm joined by the illustrious Ashley Easter on Easter weekend. Ashley, if you don't know, Ashley is a speaker, writer, coach, and abuse victim advocate, and she founded the Courage Conference, which was very successful this year. Also, Gretchen Baskerville, author of The Life-Saving Divorce, Hope for People Leaving Destructive Relationships, and Lorianne Thompson, an accountability advocate who has been very important in standing up and insisting that those who abuse are held accountable. Welcome.
Thank you for having us, Shirley.
Yes, thank you so much. I appreciate you cultivating this experience for us and everybody listening.
I'm so excited. First of all, I'd just like to say that I'm a little disturbed about some of the narrative that's coming out right now, as if the poor abuser can't help himself because he's quarantined with his loved one. And the victims are not striking out. Also, I'm a little concerned about the narrative that says if your life is in danger, you cannot escape because of the quarantine. We have our work cut out for us to help people see that the same methods to help are still in place. In fact, this is a special circumstance in which we can actually increase the amount of help available during this quarantine. I did speak with a representative from the National Domestic Violence Hotline. She shared with me some surprising information, and that is that there are 150 people working on the hotline, but there are 13 other agencies that access the hotline and refer to them. So they, however, said they are not experiencing increases right now in contact violence. Traditionally, she said, or historically, the spike occurs after the quarantine is over, because then the victim has more safety and privacy to reach out for support, and that tends to escalate attempts to keep her or him in control. I also was interested to find out that of course we know the shelters and are stressed. Emergency services are overloaded. The hotline and others are showing a $250,000 gap in funding, even with the CARE Act resources. So there, right there, is something that we want to keep in mind for anyone who cares, that we can increase donations. We can try doing a FundMe for a shelter. We can donate items. We can help pay for the hotel rooms. When the shelters get overloaded, they pay for hotel rooms for their clients. So there are many ways that we can continue to support this effort. The hotline is good in providing a safety planning. In the resources at the end of the conversation, there are three safety planning measures. And it's an interactive safety planning in which the client, the woman or the man who needs help, can go through and fill in the answers, and then the website will generate a safety plan for you. We know that computer use can be monitored. If a person is afraid their internet usage is being monitored, the hotline asks that you call them at 1-800-799-7233 in order to find out how to block that access. So I'd like to hear from you about, have you experienced ways that people in quarantine can actually build their self-esteem and self-care during this time?
Yes, so this is Ashley speaking, and thank you so much for that introduction and giving us an overview of what this theme is like. And I would echo what you said about, you know, if you are able to reach out for help now and you are in a dangerous situation, I encourage you to still reach out to hotlines, reach out to police. And I understand that for some people, they may not be in a position to do that yet. And I'd love to offer an additional resource as far as reaching out to hotlines. There's actually a crisis text line, so you don't even have to use your voice to make a call. And you can actually text HOME, the word H-O-M-E, to 741741. And this is a crisis text line. They will connect you with an advocate, a counselor, to direct you to the services you need. So if you need a little bit more discreet option than a voice-to-voice hotline, that could be another thing to look into. But yes, the self-care practices that you mentioned, I think what it's all about right now is, first of all, realizing what you're experiencing. And, you know, if you're in a situation where an abuser has begun to harm you, either emotionally, physically, sexually, financially, keeping you from the resources that you need, I think it's really helpful to realize that, you know what, this is something that they are choosing to do to me, but it's not my fault. It's not something that is something that I'm causing. And while stress and loss of job, economic loss can be a trigger sometimes for an abuser, it's never an excuse for an abuser. It is never your fault, and the situation doesn't excuse the way they're treating you. So the first step, I think, is recognizing that what is happening to you is not okay, then reaching out for help and support through some of those hotlines you mentioned. And then if you're not physically able to leave, I think it's all about trying to put yourself in the safest positions as possible, and reducing the situation. You may not be able to block all the forms of abuse, but looking for ways to try to keep yourself safe, reduce your anxiety levels while you're in that situation until you're able to make those steps out.
Thank you so much, Ashley. Those are all very valuable. I just wanted to add, when I wrote my book, that is part of what that is about, because I was still in a marriage, and I was working out ways that I could build myself up while I was still, I say, in bondage, because I was. At that time, I had no money, I had no support, I could not leave, so it wasn't that different from a quarantine. So I would recommend, if you are in that situation, to try to find the time, use any time that you can to work through affirmations, self-talk, positive self-talk, access positive support in reading and online, develop your assertive communication skills, focus on your time if you have children with them. It's a stressful time for them as well. And so this time, like a lot of us, can actually be used to build yourself up and counter mentally and emotionally the damage that's been that's being tried to affect you and hurt you and degrade you, and mentally and emotionally build yourself up with these resources, which my book has steps. There are many, many resources that have steps for building yourself up. Texting is important, because you can quickly erase a text. But continue to reach out. There are people out there who want to help, and they just need to know. One of the successful methods is to use a script. For example, an agreed upon script, someone you've agreed with this person about eyeliner and makeup. And those are codes. She can text you or call you and say, message me about my makeup to see if I could still sell it at the special price. I'll keep checking in. And then if you need assistance to get out, she will say, ask specifically about my eyeliner, and I'll place an order for you. Just give me your address. There's no postage necessary. Those kinds of coded scripts can still help you access the safety that you need.
Sorry about that. You bring up such a great topic, Shirley, and it's really important that those of us who are safe right now, that we reach out to our friends, that we encourage them to set up that safe word. That's what you're talking about, safe words, words that mean something, either come over, you know, come over, I'm being abused, or call 911 for me, or I'm in trouble, could you create some kind of diversion? Could you call my husband and ask for his help on something? So there's a lot of things that we can do as outsiders, as people who aren't in this situation, to help our friends. Because when you're stuck at home with an abuser, you're not out in public. So your children aren't seeing people who might be mandated reporters. They're not in the presence of teachers. You're not going to church, so there's no clergy to notice black eyes or broken arms. You're not seeing healthcare providers for your routine dental work or for your routine pap smear. So you're in a little bit more of a difficult situation. And so this is where you can reach out to a friend and say, let's set up a series of safe words. And I've definitely had friends do that. The other thing to do is, now, if you're in a very small house, it's going to be really difficult to do anything that your spouse doesn't notice, especially if they're there too. But maybe if they're fixated on some, you know, something on the internet, you can work together to put, you can work on small ways that you can put together, like what we call a flight bag. And that would be, you know, some spare clothes, some medication, your keys, your clothes for your kids, their medications, your documents you might need. So, for example, your any like Social Security number, your Social Security card, your driver's license. If you are already receiving, you know, Medicare, your Medicare card, you might want to have your medical insurance. And start kind of putting those together in a little backpack. And I wouldn't bring out a backpack that the abuser hasn't seen before. You know, just throw it in the kid's backpack. So something that they're used to seeing and they're just going to ignore. In addition to the text that Ashley gave, and I love that, the other thing you can do is chat. If you've got to stay quiet, if you want to chat with someone at midnight in a way that your spouse can't hear, the hotline.org also has a chat line. So you don't have to say a word verbally that might wake them up. So again, that's thehotline.org. And that's a great way of doing it too. And if you have deaf friends, this is a tough time because they're at even a worse disadvantage than we are. And there is a special email for them. It's National Deaf Hotline at adwaslikesam.org. Again, National Deaf Hotline at adwas, S like Sam, not like F like Frank, .org. And we've got to reach out to those who have even fewer options than we do. I think that's, you know, kind of going gray rock. And I'm hoping that Ashley and Lorianne can talk a little bit more about gray rock. But that's just becoming as uninteresting as you can possibly be. You know, focus your attention on the children. Don't just give very neutral answers to everything that the abuser says. Don't stir up any conflict. Just be uninteresting and, you know, be kind of mildly reassuring. Oh, yeah, I see that. And, but not going positive or negative, just sort of agreeing with them for this time. Because your job is to do or say whatever you can to stay safe until you can get away. And even though the shelters are in trouble right now, not in trouble, but they are starting to fill, that doesn't mean there's not room for you and your kids. So it might be worthwhile if you get an option, if you get the ability to slip out now. Because remember, the abuser can't get out very easily either. And so this crisis actually works in your favor. And for those of us, again, who are not in that situation, who could help shelters, one just reached out to me yesterday and said, we have 20 women here and we are running out of toilet paper. We will not be able to make it through tomorrow morning at 10 a.m. So that, you know, we put out an all points bulletin and got them a lot, 96 rolls of toilet paper. So those are other things you can do. But I'd love to hear from Lorianne and Ashley more about that.
I love that point you made, Gretchen, about, you know, he's in the same situation. So the field has been kind of even leveled out there. Yes, Lorianne, what can you help us with here?
Well, I think we have created, well, I think the virus has created a national situation where the circumstances that are normally in place to permit and to exaggerate or amplify the effects of abuse are now available to the entire globe. So we all know that abuse and abusers create social distance, physical distance, emotional distance, a tremendous isolation, a chronic feeling of being an infection yourself. I'm afraid I'm not terribly hopeful that this has leveled the playing field for, although I understand what Gretchen's saying, and I think that I'm listening to you talk, and I think that you're just an amazing woman and you have such incredible resources. But whoever was already at a disadvantage before this whole schmozzle started is in the worst possible position that you could possibly be in, because the playing field's never going to be level when it comes to abusers and those whom they abuse. So it's harder now than ever to become empowered to get out, simply because if you're not dead, you're not going to get a whole lot of attention. And even if you are dead, sometimes in some countries, perhaps not in America, people won't come and take your body away because they're terrified. They won't come into your house because they're terrified that you might have a virus. But I find it interesting as I'm watching this whole thing play out, because I wonder how we would all feel if sexual abuse or domestic violence or physical abuse or maltreatment of women and children, it is as virulent as what the coronavirus is. We just don't realize it, right? So because this can befall on anybody, that's actually also the reality of abuse. It can befall on anybody, and it can impact every household or any household, regardless of socioeconomic status. So in terms of holding people accountable, you have to be smarter than ever. And I really think that, that it's up to leaders and advocates to continue the conversation like you guys are here today, or like we are here today, to find ways to do things like having a code word. France put in a code word, it's called Mask 19, where any woman who walked into a pharmacy and went to the pharmacist and said that code word, Mask 19, immediately there would be a series of events that would take place, where the woman would say, for instance, say the code word, and the pharmacist would hold her there for a period of time under the guise of, well, I'll be 45 minutes getting your prescription. And in the meantime, the police are called for the abuser and dealt with. There needs to be sort of national strategies in place because women and their children, and they cannot be disconnected, are in incredibly vulnerable situations at this time. And resources, while Ashley had said at the beginning of this conversation that unemployment and financial strain is never an excuse for abuse, but it is one of the leading factors for the aggravation, for the loss of a job, the loss of income, the loss of respect, the loss of purpose, the loss of distance, physical distance between yourself and the abuser and your children. That's all of a sudden just, it's just been wiped out in one foul swoop. So we can't deny that while abuse is pervasive across platforms, certain types of abuses are actually, they collect under certain socioeconomic brackets, and a whole bunch more people, in fact, millions more people just joined that bracket. So we're at a very, and we're in a crisis point, not only in your nation, but my nation and nations across the globe.
That's really great. And could I, I really appreciate you bringing up the idea of, you know, children in here too, and, you know, women and, you know, adult men who are experiencing abuse are, you know, obviously very vulnerable, but as you mentioned, children are too, and they're like the most vulnerable among us. And while, if you see like active abuse happening to an adult, you know, it's appropriate to call the police. Or if they ask you, it's appropriate to call the police. But sometimes, you know, if there's emotional abuse happening, like you need to allow that person to make a choice as to whether this is the right timing for police to be called in. But with children, if you see or, even suspect abuse as somebody from the outside, you need to call Child Protective Services or the police and make a tip, like just say, hey, you know, I saw this, or even if you didn't see something, but I suspect this, there's unusual behavior happening, and I think that you should check it out. And sometimes the police will get on that. Child Protective Services will get on it right away, depending on what you see, saw, or suspected. Other times they won't be able to investigate yet, but your report will be put in kind of a file, and other people who might call in later, or if you call later at a different time because you have more information, that will be noted. And sometimes it's not just the initial call. Sometimes it's your call could have been the tipping point because other people called too. So with child abuse, if you see it or if you suspect it, you do not need to wait to call the police. You do not need to have evidence. You do not need to investigate to reach out to Child Protective Services and say, hey, something's going on here. You need to check it out.
Fabulous points, both of you and Gretchen. I guess what I'm coming from is hope. As a person who now considers myself a thriver rather than a survivor, what helped me the most was to claim my power. I got in such a mental place where it was like, oh, you can't do anything. You're just, you know, is everyone else has all the power. He has all the power. And so my turning point was recognizing what I could do. And what I could do was work on my mental and emotional well-being. I could work on helping fortify my children. I had to laugh when Gretchen mentioned about someone asking my husband, the husband, to get do something to get him out of the house, because my husband would never do what he wanted, though I would ask other people to ask him to do what I wanted him to do, and then he would do it. So I just think during this time, you can make an inventory, and you might be surprised at how much power you do have, because let's face it, the abuser right now is depending on you to abuse. And I think that sometimes I held cards, and I was asking him if I could play the game. And I think another thing that's happened that's maybe beneficial, not to diminish the suffering in the situation, but now, as Lorianne pointed out, people are more aware. This has helped spread the awareness of the numbers involved, and people are experiencing what it feels like to not have mobility, to not have freedom of choices. And I've always said that this is a war. Victims are veterans of domestic war. But just because it happens one person at a time behind one door in one house, the dimensions are not appreciated and the effects are not appreciated. But anyone who copes with this and thrives and gets survives and gets out is a veteran. And people understand the camaraderie of prisoners of war, and they expect them to have that support when they're released. But people are underestimating that these people and the victims in the houses are under the same level and tactics as any other form of manipulation, coercion, imprisonment, and abuse. So I want to put out there that there is you have power, but I especially want to also encourage people to continue to be neighborly. And we want to talk now a little bit before we close about how can we help and support the advocates. How can the advocates maintain their emotional and mental well-being in order to be a support? Ashley, you have an upcoming, I believe, offering in managing anxiety. Is that correct?
Yeah, so the other week I hosted a masterclass on calm in crisis, and that recording is now available for free, including a free meditation, and I believe there's a download with it as well, a little workbook. But basically this masterclass was in reducing anxiety. We talked about the brain. We talked about the different parts of the brain that cause us to experience the fight, flight, or freeze when we're in an anxiety mode, whether that is due to past trauma and something that got triggered in us, maybe because of our new experience with COVID-19. Maybe you're safe now as an advocate and a survivor. Maybe you're a thriver. But COVID-19 is reminding you of a period of time in your life when you were trapped. And you're feeling trapped again, and those triggers are coming up. So in that masterclass, we talk about the parts of the brain that are actually reacting and responding, and how the logical part of our brain that is prone to making good decisions and, you know, making plans and kind of looking for the logic that actually kind of goes offline in your brain when you're experiencing panic and anxiety. And so I give some different tools for lowering your anxiety. This does not mean that it is a miracle cure where your anxiety will be gone if you just do all these things. Maybe, you know, depending on the level, it could bring you to that point. But even if you're, let's say you're at a level 10 of anxiety, some of these tips and tools can maybe bring you down to a 7. And the 7 might be more manageable, so you can make decisions for yourself and ways to keep yourself safe, ways to keep you and your family safe. But then, you know, maybe after you're able to get to that point, you're able to lower your anxiety even more and then be able to reach out and support other people. You can go to my website, Ashley Easter, Easter like the holiday, ashleyeaster.com. And at the top of the homepage, at the very top, there's a link you can click on to get that free Common Crisis Masterclass. But I'll just share a couple things for support with advocates. I think we can feel a bit helpless right now as advocates who want to support survivors, because maybe your world is falling apart too. Maybe you're not in an abusive situation, but maybe you are experiencing financial loss. Maybe you have a loved one who has experienced the virus or some effect of the virus, and you're feeling very overwhelmed. Well, this is the time to focus on self-care for yourself. If you have a lot more time in your day because of COVID-19, maybe you're not working, maybe you can spend more time on self-care. But even if you are one of those professional providers that are out there, boots on the ground right now, try to take even 20 minutes, even 10 minutes to just calm and relax yourself. So whether that is, you know, doing a dance, you know, just like happy music can sometimes really shift your vibration, your energy, and make you feel better. Maybe it's doing a meditation. There's so many free meditations on YouTube that you can go through. Maybe it's taking a bath or eating that piece of chocolate. But you know, really listening to your body in these times. So you've got to take care of yourself first. You have to put on your oxygen mask first before you can then go out and help other people. And I'll let somebody else, you know, address some of the ways that the helpers, the bystanders can, you know, step in and help those who are in crisis situations. But I would really say that if you are an advocate right now, it is a big priority for you to take care of you as well as taking care of other people, because if you aren't taking care of, if you aren't investing in yourself and self-care, you're not going to have the energy to go out and help. Plus, you just deserve self-care for yourself.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Ashley. Gretchen, Lori, any other thoughts?
Go ahead for it, Lori. Oh, okay. You know, one of the easiest things we can do for one another is just, you know, getting on the phone with each other. So one of my closest friends from childhood just discovered that she needs a double mastectomy next Tuesday. And, you know, obviously now you've got COVID-19 and then you're afraid to go to hospitals, right? Because what if I can get it there? There's more of it in hospitals than it is, you know, in her home. And so just talking it through, just, you know, spending hours on the phone, or video, whatever, with friends who just need to talk. And that gives them a chance to anchor themselves that, oh, there's, even if the world is going to pieces, there's someone who cares about me and somebody who's willing to talk to me for an hour. And that is just a lifeline right there. And then to jump on to what Ashley said, for me, it's creativity. So I love taking photographs, and there are really easy photo manipulating programs online, and I can sink hours into that. And suddenly COVID-19 is gone. And so if you do crafts or do baking or whatever it is, you know, even doing the little online exercise programs that a number of the gyms are offering, just whatever it takes to reduce that cortisol, to get our minds off of, you know, the catastrophizing and the doom we sometimes feel, really, really helps. But I'm really curious about what you're experiencing in Canada, Lori. Lori-Anne.
You know, there's a couple of things that are really helpful in Canada. Number one, we have universal health care. So we all complain about that sometimes when in times, in non-pandemic times, because it means that everybody has equal access to care, and sometimes that increases our wait time, should be told. But in times like this, what it means is we have channels in place to protect the public, and that absolutely anybody, regardless if they're homeless or not, can walk into an emergency room and you know, the millionaire and the penniless man can also get the same level of care. So that's incredible. We have a more socialist approach. And Canada's roots are slightly different than the U.S., not better, not worse, just different in the way that we separated from each other and each became our own individual country. So there's that. And we also have a lot of uninhabitable land. so our population density is lower. And when we look at any country, part of the issue where things get multiplied is not universal healthcare and where population is really, really close together. So there's a high density. So we're doing not too badly. And in general, one of the other really important factors for us is, in general, as a nation, our motto is sort of peace, order, and good government. So we have an overall trust in our government's actions on our behalf, overall. Now, there are always critics, mm-hmm. but as a general rule, if the government creates policies and procedures overall, in general, Canadians are pretty happy to comply. And we have a general sense that we are our brother's keepers. So I think that's where, as opposed to slightly different than perhaps some of the American sort of framework of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness that amplifies personal rights, Canadians tend to lay down their personal rights a little easier in favor of the public good. So there's that. So we're doing quite well overall. We have a lot less deaths, but nobody loves being sheltered in place or stuck in their home. We do have a lot of green space in most of our cities that are mandatory. So most people can get outside and move about. So even that is helpful. Like our walkways have stayed open. Our playground equipment is shut down, but people can move about, which is excellent. Our curriculum, our public, the vast majority of our children are in public schools, not in private schools. So the curriculum has gone online and children now have one-to-one access with the teachers. So that's another really good place where parents can dialogue and seek help. Right? So a mother can be helping their child with online programming, and that could be not seen as a strange thing for an abuser. Or the mother could say, we have to go and sit in our car outside of the Tim Hortons or another place that has Wi-Fi, and they can get away from the abuser for a period of time and make individual connections. So we have some pretty good things in place. We also have a really deeply and powerfully felt reality that as Canadians we have we engaged in colonialism right up until the 1990s for our Indigenous Canadians, and so our most vulnerable population happens to be our Indigenous Canadians, and I would say that at least at this point in time we're doing everything that we can to make that right and understand that our Indigenous community is at a higher vulnerability for absolutely everything from substance abuse to trafficking to murdered and missing Indigenous women. So, you know, I don't want to toot my country's horn too much but we're just doling out money left, right, and center to try to help everybody that can possibly be helped. So I'm excited. As far as self-care for advocates, I agree with everything that everybody else has said. There's a lot of evidence that maintaining some sort of routine is really important, and that exercise is also incredibly important. We have telehealth here, which you would have there as well, and so you are able to get what you need via telehealth. For the most part, if there was a prescription, and a lot of the normal restrictions that were beyond medical care have kind of lifted because everybody's in the same boat.
Those are.
I want to move to Canada.
Well, I wasn't going to say it, but there is, you know, a movement.
I help you find. I make a good neighbor. I make a mean carrot cake.
Okay. Hey, just text us that address, okay? But before we close, I just want to share a little bit of my perspective as my abuser was a minister ordained in two denominations. And so, of course, I would access by phone, I would call prayer lines. And I had one in particular that was supposed to be a different woman all the time. You weren't supposed to get the same woman. But no matter what time I called, I would get the same woman. So she became an angel to me. And I clung to the affirmative verses such as good earth, the loins with truth, and those things which built me up. I did not find a lot of help in the church because I was a minister's wife. But I want to say that part of what I wanted to share was to not buy into the catastrophizing as has been mentioned. For example, the news media is saying domestic violence is up 35%. The National Domestic Violence Hotline is saying no, they're not seeing that, that it would probably occur later. So I do resist that kind of thinking because it doesn't help me. And not to put my head in the sand, but I try to keep my mind on what helps me, what nourishes me. And this will pass. Something else will come along, but this will pass. And I just want to encourage both advocates and people in place in isolation with abusers to claim your strength. You are worthwhile. You are powerful. And you will emerge. And there are many, many people here to help you. Is there anything else before we go? I so appreciate your expertise and information and experience. What a wealth of help as you've expressed here today. I'm so grateful.
Well, thank you all for the opportunity. And I guess just the last thing I would say is, you know, if you are in a dangerous situation, please do look into those hotlines. And what I have found is a lot of times those who are experiencing abuse often don't give the term abuse to it. So even if you aren't sure if it's abuse and you just feel like it's a toxic environment, if that word doesn't resonate with you, still go ahead and reach out to that hotline and they can give you a good idea of what, if what you're experiencing actually does fit the criteria of abuse. Because sometimes we have this idea of what abuse is and it can actually be a lot more subtle than what our image is or what we see on TV. So if you're experiencing a toxic relationship that is causing you a lot of stress, making you feel unsafe or in danger, even if at this point you wouldn't use the word abuse to describe it, still reach out to one of those hotlines and there might still be help available and they can help you actually define the terms a little bit more properly.
I have to ditto that, Ashley, because that is the first level of confusion of the seven levels that I cover in my book, is even recognizing if I'm being abused. I had to call hotline to find out if I was being abused.
Yeah. So, same here. I had to see a therapist first before I knew.
Yes.
I suspected it, but I wasn't sure.
It doesn't feel good. Whatever it is not good.
Yeah.
So honor your gut, honor your intuition, claim your power. You can do this. Thank you all so much. Have a happy Easter. Did you want to share anything else?
Yeah, I would just like to say that I agree with you about empowerment, and that the only thing that will save somebody is actually eventually themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Now, obviously, there's a whole host of supporters and people that will facilitate, but we partner with people to empower, to help them to become empowered. And I would leave it with the idea that empowerment is a process. And it's stepwise, sometimes two steps forward, one step back, sometimes three steps forward and four steps back. It takes time to gather that level of courage and self-knowledge, especially when it's been so obliterated by abuse. So thank you for all your empowerment and all the work that each one of you women do to partner with women so that they can be strengthened in their inner person.
Thank you, Lori. Gretchen?
I wanted to talk a little bit about how destructive relationships aren't God's will. And we're all Christians here. I don't know if we mentioned that at the top of the program. But, you know, marriage wasn't meant to be toxic. You weren't meant to walk on eggshells and feel tension all the time and feel like the bad behavior never really gets resolved. It was meant to be loving. And if you need to leave a toxic, dangerous, destructive relationship, even if there's no violence, even if it's all verbal or just you have a spouse who doesn't even acknowledge your presence, you know, God loves you and you can love God and get divorced. And I know we don't need to talk about going that far in this particular podcast, but God does love you and he will still love you, really. So
thank you so much. That is so true. That's what I found. You know, if you believe in a forgiving God, go ahead and ask for forgiveness and get out to save your life.
Absolutely.
So again, happy Easter weekend. Thank you so much. I'll be forwarding the list of the resources that we discussed here today. Thank you again.